Andrew's Physical Therapy at Blaine and Strawberry Plains. That's where I've gone to rehab my knee, shoulder, and elbow. When rubbing a little dirt on it ain't good enough.
This is part two of our conversation on Rewind with Jimmy Himes with Heath Shuler. Heath, we had talked about in part one toward the end about your college career. You had a great career at Tennessee, and one of the offenses you had, you averaged over 200 yards passing, over 200 yards rushing. That's about as balanced as you can get. You remember that offense being very efficient, don't you?
You know, the great part is we had great receivers, great running backs, but the most important part of that is we had the, I think, one of the best offensive lines ever to play at Tennessee. Having that as kind of the nucleus of our team on the offensive line, offensively, it truly, you know, I love to see a balanced offense. I love to see the opportunity to be able to run when necessary. And so, you know, we could make the short yardage stuff, or we could, you know, go five wides.
How would you like running the offense, the up-tempo offense that Josh Heupel has?
It's kind of the point guard, the fast break. You know, you're making the really quick decisions. 2-minute drills are always the things that I enjoyed most, whether, you know, high school, college, or the NFL. Or, you know, you're out there on the field, you're in the moment, and, you know, the faster you can go, the better I felt that I played. With the ability to be able to run the ball. But even my second year in college, I mean, David kind of held me back from running. I mean, he's like, hey, let's be smart. You know, let's be smart. My sophomore year, you know, he didn't care. He's like, you know, you want to run over a defensive back, run over a linebacker, have at it. But by the time my junior year came around, we were a lot more intentional about protecting ourselves and then being able to get down, get out of bounds.
So that 1993 season, your only loss during the regular season was to Florida. Yeah. You tied Alabama 17-17. You outplayed them, but then David Palmer had that 2-point conversion late. But you go on to be the runner-up in the Heisman Trophy. Did you ever dream happen for you?
But the team aspect of football was always so important. And so, you know, I told them, when I was in fifth grade, I told my parents I'd play in the NFL.
In the fifth grade?
In the fifth grade. We had a class, in health class, and you had to set your goals for life. And so, you know, part of it was to go share it with your parents and, you know, give the things that you needed to do in order to obtain those goals, right? So the goal was one thing, but obtaining the goals by 10 other items that you needed to do. And so I told my parents in the fifth grade that I play in the NFL.
So did you give them a position? I'm going to be a running back, quarterback, or offensive lineman?
Oh, come on.
Which one?
Tailback. You know, I mean, Earl Campbell, I was wearing 34, you know.
So that year you run up in the Heisman Trophy, you go play in a bowl game against Penn State.
Yep.
And then you announce that you're going to go to the NFL.
Hardest decision I ever made in my life. Yeah. I mean, partly because I had every reason to stay. My brother was there, our team, everything. I mean, even to the point my girlfriend, my wife today, you know, I mean, I only got to spend, you know, one semester together in college. I mean, one semester with my brother in college. I never got to throw him a touchdown pass. Now, Jerry threw him several touchdown passes. So I never got – Jerry did.
Who is still Benji's favorite quarterback.
Benji will always tell you that, yeah. Through that process, I had every reason I wanted to stay. I mean, I truly wanted to stay. But in order for, you know, to pay it was over $20,000 for the Lloyd of London health and, you know, the body insurance to protect the financial loss if I didn't turn pro, my parents were going to have to put a second mortgage on their house. Wow. And I just, you know, I mean, that was nothing at that point in time in life that I wanted to kind of blame my parents that, you know, they didn't have the finances to be able to, you know, pay the insurance policy to be able to do that. And I'd never ask them, which they would have done, but I never wanted to put my parents in that situation, you know, to go do that. I mean, it already sacrifices so much for my brother and I, you know, that's the last thing I wanted to do. And, you know, probably the other thing was, you know, the new two franchises at that time, Carolina Panthers and Jacksonville Jaguars, were coming onto the scene. And the rules were such they didn't know how they were going to be selected. You know, if you'd kind of known earlier how they was going to be able to, you know, utilize and get player, you know, good players from other teams, it may have been a different story. Because they've coming out of that, the new franchises that came in, they all, both Carolina Panthers and the Jacksonville Jaguars, played exceptionally well. Unlike what had been with the New Orleans Saints and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, where they took, you know, decades to get where they could play well. So I think the two of those, but it really came down, I didn't want to leave though. I really didn't want to leave. I mean, it was a kind of bittersweet to get drafted, but I really wanted to, I think we could have won the national championship that year.
Nobody really blamed you, as I recall, other than some outlying fans, but I think people understood your decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was a childhood dream. That's what I wanted. I mean, and it was right there. All I had to do was say yes, you know. But I mean, so much part of it was, and it was such a blur during that time. From the time the bowl game went over till that decision was made, it was really hard. I went back home, spent the time with my parents, and we really sat down. And some people thought we had already made that, you know, I'd made that decision, but I had not.
What's your Jerry Colquitt story?
So, 1992, we're competing for the starting job. And Jerry Colquitt and I were roommates. And so we would go back to our rooms at night and we would study, work on things. And so about 3 years ago, I called Jerry back up and we've been in, you know, we kept in contact, but not maybe as close as we are even now. And so I called Jerry up. I said, Jerry, I said, I owe you the biggest thank you ever in life. He said, what for? I said, you are the most selfish human being I've ever been around. We sat in that dorm room, studying game, watching tape, and you helped me. You had every reason not to help me. We were competing for the job, but you were selfless. But it wasn't until obviously much later in life that I realized really the commitment that he had made. He could have sat in his room or gone to another, you know, part of campus and studied on his own, but he would say, he'd been in the system a year before because he was a redshirt, you know, sophomore at the time. He'd say, hey, Heath, here's the way I think about this. Here's a good way of looking at this. I saw that you were, you know, or I'd have questions. Now, Jerry, explain this to me. How do you, you know, with the offense? And I was coming from a beer offense into this offense, so it was a totally different mindset of thinking. And so he helped me through that more than anyone. And I owe that to Jerry just because he was a selfless teammate.
So the draft comes up. You are the number 3 pick of the draft. You go to the Redskins, who, if I remember, that was one of your favorite teams.
Oh, that was
right?
Yeah.
So you get picked by the Redskins, and it looks like it's going to be fantastic for you.
Oh.
However, you were, quote, holdout, and I say that with quotes because there was negotiation between the Redskins and your agent about what you would make. And there was a former Redskins quarterback named Sonny Jurgensen that
really threw
blamed
me under the bus.
You for them cutting some other players due to your contract. That had to be a difficult situation to step into.
It was really challenging because it was never about the money. It was about the voidable years and the contracts. And, you know, Tom Condon at that time was with IMG and, you know, CAA now. And, you know, the most integrity, I mean, the guy that I think the world of. I mean, you know, still to this day, I think one of the best people I ever met in sports. And he was just doing his job. And part of it was, I'll never forget, it was 2 days going before we went to camp. And I had already told Thomas, I want to take my contract and give it to Charlie Casserly, who was the general manager at the time. He said, okay, fine. So they overnighted it to me. I took it to him. I put it on his desk. I said, we're a week out from camp. I want to be at camp first day. The day before camp, we leave to go to camp. I went back into his office. I said, and he had never opened my envelope.
Did he ever explain that?
Part of it was, is both Trey Johnson, who is my guard, who actually, who was picked in the second round, they had not finished his contract. So he missed 2 or 3 days of camp. So they waited till I was the last one before they started that. I wasn't a type guy that, you know, Sonny Jurgensen wanted to go, you know, hang out at the bar and have fun and meet late at night and have conversation. And that was not me.
Did you ever talk to Sonny Jurgensen?
Yeah, we had conversation, but that was the problem is I wasn't that type of person for him. I wasn't the guy that was going to go hang out at the bar and drink after practice. You know, I was going to do the things that was necessary to get back to practice the very next day. You know, get the rest I needed, study the film. And I think it was just a kind of a personality that he just felt like if I wasn't willing to go do those things with him, then, you know, I don't know. He just held, he really held it against me, and he had, you know, he had the ear of the fans. I mean, everybody's a Washington Redskins fan, a Sonny Jurgensen fan, but and so he really kind of turned the fans against me.
So after 3 years, you end up going to the Saints,
yes.
And then you suffer turf toe, or what did you so ligament damage?
I dislocated all five of my toes at the same time.
How did you do that?
So it was early in the season. We're playing Oakland, in Oakland, playing the Raiders, and right at second base, the infield was still there. The A's play on the same field.
Yeah.
So I stepped up, and Chester McLaughlin, who played at Clemson, playing for the Raiders at the time, tackled me, and my toes went into the hard infield. And I heard a snap, and all five of my toes ended up on top of my foot. And so I didn't, you know, I hobbled off the field, and they cut my shoe off of me, and there was a big bulge. I thought I just broke my foot in half, but it was my toes had just ended up on top of my foot. And so, you know, I severed all the nerves. I tore my plantar fascia, the sesamoid bones, they crushed them. And so had two surgeries, 11 and a half months on crutches, and it was the same injury that, very similar, that Larry Zonka and Calvin Hill suffered. That ended both of their careers.
And then basically ended your
career. It did in my career, yeah. Yeah. I never was able to gain movement in my toes there since then. And so when I went to the Raiders, John Gruden took a chance on me.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of John Gruden's.
Yeah.
You know, that offense was suited for what I, you know, that was suited for me, his type of offense. And it was a perfect situation to be there. Rich Gannon was there. Wade Wilson was there. So I was sitting in a really good spot. And hoping to be able to play. And so it finally went to the point I had to pass a physical and I failed it. And I asked them to just cut my toes off. And if they had just removed the first three toes, then I felt like I could, you know, I'd be okay. And the doctors wouldn't do it. So that was it.
And you told me I'm retiring.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Because you were going to give me the scoop on that story.
That's it.
Yeah. That had to be a hard decision.
Oh, that was the hardest thing to do. I mean, I had no choice. I mean, it was, you know, I had to retire. I mean, it was no way to physically play again, you know, I mean, because I had no balance. And it's still today. And, you know, I kind of blame my bad golf game or lack thereof because I don't have that balance. You know, you got to have your toes help you balance. And so I just don't have that really good balance. And so I kind of blame my really bad golf game on that. But it's, you know, it's, I've gotten where the point that I, you know, my ankle, you know, stabilizes me and stuff like that. I want to be a Hall of Famer. I want to play in the Pro Bowl. I want to do all those things. And, you know, to have gone through high school and college in such a paved road and just hit a wall of just, you know, I never had fans mad at me before, you know, in New Orleans was a, you know, that was a different, a whole different vibe down in New Orleans. I love Coach Ditka. Coach Ditka was just awesome. You know, but we just didn't have our offensive coordinator was, you know, probably not the best offensive coordinator in the league at that point in time. You know, it was a great place. I loved Coach Ditka's leadership qualities. I learned and gained a lot from that. But going out, I learned more about football in 6 months with John Gruden than I had learned with anybody in my entire football career combined. I learned more in 6 months sitting in that room with Rich Gannon and Wade Wilson and John Gruden.
So kind of unfortunately for you, every year that the draft comes up, they talk about
Bus. Yeah.
And your name shows up among the biggest.
I had a reporter.
Does that bother you?
You know, part of it is they nobody knows the story because I just said I retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, you know, I wasn't going to, you know, I felt at that point in time that, you know, if it was – people think it was an excuse, you know. I'm like, you know, it wasn't an excuse when you look at the scars on the foot and, you know, the ability to, you know, can't run and do those kind of things.
2020 Ford Mustang Convertible, $23,990. 2016 Toyota 4Runner SR5, $25,990. 21 Lincoln Aviator, $53,970. Local you trust, pre-owned vehicles you can't afford. Ray Varner Ford, your East Tennessee Ford dealership.
Man plans, and I had a plan, but God laughs. You know, and it wasn't my plan. That wasn't the plan he had for me. And honestly, I never questioned it. I mean, it hurt, I mean, it really hurt. You know, I'll never forget, I called my wife, Nicole, at the time, because we had just been married for a little over a year. And so I talked to her, and then I called my parents and called my brother, and then I called David and Philip. That was my, I called both of them and said, hey, it's over. You know, I can't play anymore, you know. But I can still remember sitting in the room when my physician, Hodges Davis, was on the phone, and we had the other doctors in the room with Coach Gruden. And the great thing is, the most awesome thing about it is that day he offered me to stay on as a coach. You know? And so Gary Stevens was our quarterback coach, and he was going to retire at the end of that year. And he said, stay on. I want you to be my quarterback coach.
But you said no?
You know, I felt like I had to remove myself from the game in order to be able to mentally overcome the game.
Well, you had to get into politics.
Oh, my goodness,
and you
Jimmy.
Did. Now, Jimmy, you were not somebody. You didn't go to political rallies. You weren't out there.
I didn't even vote half the time, Jimmy.
So what led you to get into politics?
You know, it was kind of unusual. Nicole and I we had moved back to North Carolina, and we were helping scholarship some kids from my high school and local high schools, kind of helping them with scholarships. It's called the New Century Scholar, and where they could go to school for free, you know, Southwestern Community College. And so we were helping on that, and everybody kept saying, you ought to run for office. I'm like, run for what? I mean, I don't like politics. I'm not a politician. And so it kind of built up, and I don't know exactly what had happened, but there was some very influential people that come to me and said, hey, look, you know, we'd love for you to consider running against a 14-year incumbent. Yeah. And I was like, or 16-year incumbent. And I said, okay, you know, I don't think I want to do that. But then people started calling, and I got a call from President Clinton, you know. It was kind of unusual. I was getting all these calls from all these politicians and people, and I'd look at them on my phone, straight to voicemail. I didn't take it. Didn't take his call. And it was kind of because I would always kind of consider, because I had voted for Democrats and Republicans. You know, when I did vote, I voted for the person, not the party. But ended up, it sounds cliche, but I felt that this country had been really good to me, and I had to give back.
You're into community service, but you were also into serving the country.
I didn't serve in the military. What have I done besides play athletics and do business, right? Because at that time, we had just sold our real estate company. And I'm like, what have I done to give back?
Did you play basketball against President Obama?
Oh, yes. The Blue Dogs. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, of course. I mean, it was a rough game. I mean, it was a very rough game, but we had a great time. And it was a way, it was camaraderie. It was a way to bring both parties together. And so I was kind of in charge of making, you know, getting the team together. And we did pretty well, but they were stacked. I mean, he had the best of the best, you know. So, but we had fun, and we did it three times. We had three different games of the president.
A.G. Hines Company, you don't stay in business for over a century unless you're selling quality tools and materials. At A.G. Hines, well, they've been selling building materials since anyone can remember.
Then you've got Navy that's on the team now, Island on the dance team, your daughter.
Yes.
That's got to be a thrill for you, in particular right now, to see number 21 playing quarterback Tennessee and your daughter on the dance team.
A special time. I mean, you know, if you look at any of your big events and things in life that you do personally, never amounts to what when you see your kids doing that. So to be able to watch both of them on the field, unbelievable.
It's a thrill to see that, isn't it? Yeah.
Awesome.
I got a picture, and I want you to take a look at this and see if you remember this.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
That's a picture that you signed to Bobby Denton.
I do remember that.
Public address announcer at Tennessee for like 48 years.
Oh, I love Bobby.
Tell me about your relationship with him.
So it was kind of funny when I was first getting recruited. he actually called my Aunt Avis and said, how do we get him over here? You know, so he called my Aunt Avis and said, how do we get him over here? So she tells a story extremely well about, I guess, Coach Majors and Bobby Denton were at Bobby's house there on Cherokee Boulevard. And I'm sure they was probably having a cocktail at that.
I would imagine.
And so they were having conversations. So they called my Aunt Avis and Phillips and said, how do we get Heath over to Tennessee? And so it was kind of funny because then we got a call from her and said, I think they really want you to come over in Tennessee, and actually called her brother, Calvin, my Uncle Calvin, said, and he called my dad, and I guess that's how it started. So it was almost like a little bit of a connection, but the best connection is living in Bryson City, guess what radio station you get? WIVK.
Yeah.
And that was our radio station, so you'd always listen to it. So in high school, the only game that we could ever hear on the radio was Tennessee. And so my dad was a firm believer, even after a hard-fought high school football game on Friday night, that you didn't lay in bed. And so my dad, we would cut wood for extra money for people, and so we'd go cut wood for ourselves. And so, you know, if people knew that I was handling a chainsaw from the time I was 12 years old, you know, to, you know, even when I was in college, you know, they'd probably say it was crazy that my dad, but that's just the way we grew up, right? I mean, that was a part of manhood, is being able to handle a chainsaw. But we would listen to Bobby Denton on the phone or on the radio and listen to his, you know, him, you know, do some of the, you know, the games and, you know, listen to him to go to the stadium and listen to him. So it was kind of, you know, he did the, you know, a lot of the, you know, commentating from the standpoint of, I guess it was the like a football final stuff and stuff. And it was just awesome to be able to hear him.
Well, you wrote "It's Football Time in Tennessee."
Yes. Yeah, that was his motto. Yeah.
It was his motto. Yeah. So Bobby Denton meant a lot to you.
Yes.
No doubt.
Very much so.
What has the University of Tennessee meant to Heath Shuler?
I don't know where I'd be today if it wasn't for Tennessee. I mean, coming across a mountain, coming from a small hometown, people making you feel welcome. That's the reason I moved back. I mean, this is home.
Heath, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Catch up with you.
Yes, sir.